Welcome to the Modern Vinyl Podcast, Random Pool Edition. This is Alan Miller. This is a continuation of our segment about Bob Dylan in the 80s, where we go through every album he put out in the 80s and kind of discuss how we feel about it. I'm joined by Matt Pfefferkorn, as usual, and on this episode we discuss Bob Dylan's 1985 album, Empire Burlesque. Enjoy. This is Alan.
This is Matt.
And this is Empire Burlesque. Oh, God. All right. So, first off, I made notes.
Okay.
When I listened to it earlier today.
All right.
Tight Connection to My Heart.
Yeah.
Track one.
Right.
We can just talk about the tracks before we talk about the history, right? Like, we can get into the history as we go.
Oh, yeah. It'll all come out at once.
Comes out in the wash.
Yeah.
Tight Connection to My Heart is Glory Days with weird Dylan lyrics. Discuss.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I like this track.
How many do you like on the album so we can get that metric?
How many do I like versus how many are solid? Like... Killer tracks.
Can we say any are solid? Let's get that out of the way first.
Dark Eyes is the sleeper on it.
Is that the last track?
Yeah. You never made it to the last one. Look up in 95, Patti Smith did a cover of it. It was great. All right, so Tight Connection to My Heart. He reworked in 93. For the Supper Club shows. And it turned out a whole lot better when he took out that Tight Connection to My Heart chorus.
So I want to interject one quick thing is this whole 80s thing of 60s and 70s musicians getting into the 80s and then going, I really need some women to sing behind me over every line. Leonard Cohen did it as well.
Yeah.
They all started doing that in the 80s.
Right.
The difference being, if you listen to Leonard Cohen, I'm Your Man, that album production-wise sounds pretty close to like Tight Connection to My Heart. It has the nice 80s snare drum machine snap kind of thing to it. But the Leonard Cohen is still pretty good. That's the thing if you were to compare Tight Connection to My Heart to Everybody Knows or Closing Time or something like that, the later Leonard Cohen tracks right. in the late 80s, early 90s, yeah. his work, even though they sound dated, Bob's sound dated, and I don't think they work both.
Well, he was still lost at this time.
Right.
He still didn't know how to fit into an MTV world. Or a rock world, or a touring circuit, to an extent.
Cohen found that. He found it with First We Take Manhattan. That got so much great play tune. On MTV.
Yeah.
That weird video of like Soviet dark gray skies and all that. Like that got so much airplay.
Dylan could make a good video in the 80s, really. And that could have hampered some of it. I don't know.
Before we get to the rest of the tracks, I got to bring up one thing, too, is from our last podcast for The Real Live, one of your friends commented on Facebook about the Cruzados and the Plugs.
Oh, yeah.
Or the Plugs / Cruzados.
Right.
Which were a punk band in the early 80s
yeah.
that I'd never heard of. I had no idea what this guy was talking about. He's like, wait. Maybe if he'd had the Plugs or whatever. I was like, okay, well, I don't know what that means. So I looked it up on YouTube. And then I got to the video of the Letterman.
Oh, yeah. They backed him up.
Where they backed Bob on Letterman. And it's a batshit insane performance.
Oh, it's shit hot.
Where Bob comes out looking like he's like in fucking Gary Newman's two-way army.
Right.
With like a pencil thin, yeah. like necktie and like the gray.
It was Letterman, man. He was
like
all dressed
a black
up.
Suit, like, but not saved era Dylan. It was not
no,
at
no.
all. He comes out like he was just in Elvis Costello's band and wants to come like out on stage.
Yeah.
And they did a rendition of Joker Man.
They did Joker Man.
Where it sounded like none of the band had ever heard the song before because they did it like a straight on new wave piece.
Right.
And nobody knew what to make of it. They didn't know what was going on. Like, why is he dressed like a punk? Why is he, or like, not even a punk, but like, why is he dressed like a new wave guy? Why is it this weird band behind him that are like playing this twice speed?
Which honestly, who knows? Dylan didn't even really have a band at that time. So he probably just grabbed
them. Yeah, I think they only like practiced for a week. And then they played the show and then they're gone.
Yeah.
Like it was done.
They also did a great version of Don't Start Me Talking, too.
Was that where he like, I think Don't Start Me Talking was where Bob grabbed a harmonica on stage during the Letterman performance. It's in the wrong key and he hits like one note and then throws the harmonica.
Yeah.
And then starts searching for like 10 minutes. For the harmonica in the right key.
Walking around, prowling around the stage. Now, was that the actual Letterman show or was that the sound check? Because there's also a sound check out there too, I think.
I thought they did two songs on Letterman. I thought that was the second song.
Okay.
I thought.
Yeah,
I
it's
might
been
be
a while
mistaken.
Since I've watched it, but that's your 80s highlight.
Well, and I mean, No Mercy's the 80s highlight.
Well,
but
yeah.
For live.
Oh,
that
man,
is the,
it was killer.
Can you imagine what kind of things he could have came up with if he went that path? Like,
oh, man, it would have been awesome.
Just go raw as shit and like take these songs that he was writing but make them raw.
Well, you know, some of that style and what he was conjuring up there on Letterman kind of started to show through a little bit down the line and down in the groove.
Yeah.
Some of that kind of... rockabilly, punk, punkish, whatever. And a lot of that showed on stage during the 88 tour.
Well, I just wanted to interject that because that was a really neat thing that I'd never, like, and I think it's still a little obscure. I don't think a lot of people know about that connection with the Cruzados and the Plugs and all that.
That would be one Randy Mason, I think, that was.
Was that the guy's name?
I think so.
Okay.
That sounds like Randy. He is a Dylan aficionado.
So I wrote notes while I was listening to Empire Burlesque.
Yep.
My note for seeing the real you, is that what it's called?
Seeing the real you at last.
Is snare sounds terrible, boring.
Yeah.
He had the worst 80s snare sound. It's like he had to really try to get it to sound that terrible.
Yeah, this album suffers big time. And the sad thing is the musicians that are on it are great. You know,
right.
I mean, you've got Ron Woods on it. Half of Tom Petty's band is on it. Jim Keltner's on it. Solid band.
Was Petty's keyboardist, what's his name?
Benmont Tinch.
Yeah, was he on there?
He's all over.
Oh, man.
You just can't hear him.
Yeah. Oh, of course not. Of course not. So do we even talk about that track anymore? Do we need to talk about it? Are you on the same page with me about that track just being kind of terrible?
Oh, what?
The
seeing the real you at last?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
okay.
This is an album of a lot of just mediocre tunes and the production work doesn't help it.
So then we get to, is it I'll Remember You? Is that the next
one?
Yeah. So we get to I'll Remember You and it's for the most part a standard 80s power ballad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really nothing more, nothing less, standard 80s power ballad. But the harmony is so off. Who's the girl singing with them on it?
That was probably, what's her name? Carol.
I can't understand
Carol
it.
Dennis.
I can't understand why nobody said this doesn't sound good. Because she comes in off time with them. Or maybe he's coming in off time. I'm not sure who came in off, but the notes don't match and they kind of trail back and forth. There's no synergy to the harmonizing whatsoever.
Oh, actually, no, that's Madeline Quebec.
Okay.
On that one. You know, it was the mid 80s. It was Miami Vice. Maybe they had a lot of recreational materials that hampered from.
Do you think anyone told him, like, hey, man?
No,
I don't
because
think this
he's
sounds,
Bob Dylan.
Right. And that's why this suffers so greatly.
Yeah.
It's the George Lucas effect where you go back to do those movies and nobody tells you, hey, this script kind of sucks. This is not the best thing ever. Like, episode one's not going to really be that good. I feel like this is the same effect because Bob was such an icon.
Yeah.
In the 80s.
Right.
I went back. I watched his acceptance into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 87 or 88. I think it's 88. I think that's when it was. It's on the cover of one of these. What's that? 1988. Yeah. 88 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Bruce came out and gave him a great introduction. And he came out and talked just a little bit. That year is actually notable because that's the year that Mike Love of the Beach Boys got inducted that year. And Mike Love came out and made an ass of himself by saying that Mick Jagger was chicken shit to take the stage with the Beach Boys because they had so much. What's notable from that year.
I forgot about that, yeah.
But I think that Bob was just such an icon. Nobody had the balls to tell him, like, this isn't good, man.
Right, yeah.
We see what you're doing with these songs, but this production's not right. Nothing's right about any of this.
No, and, you know, a lot of those albums suffered that we've talked about, and the next one we'll talk about, same type of thing, but eventually he figured it out, and maybe it was him figuring it out himself because nobody had the guts to stand up. And, you know, although Daniel Lanois, you know, that's down the line.
So the only other songs that I really like to talk about on Empire Burlesque was When the Night Comes. Is it When the Night Comes Falling?
Yeah.
The drums literally sound like they stuck a Casio keyboard up to the microphone and hit play on a pre-recorded drum track.
It's bad.
It's like do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It's the worst drum sound I've ever heard on
this record. Is the frustration, too, when you hear that track, but then you go and listen to the bootleg series, which has a version of that song that is so different and so better.
Like when you hear like how he was writing it, like him in the process of writing it?
No, or? it's a completed track. They just didn't pick that version.
So strange.
And yeah, and it's no Casio keyboard, and it's killer. It's great.
You agree with me on the drum part on that? Like, do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yes. It's bad. Clean Cut Kid is a good tune on here. Yeah. It's a rockabilly tune.
Yeah, it's okay.
You know.
I did put a note at the end of mine when I was listening to it for Dark Eyes. I put traditional. After all that, not bad, though.
So
I just didn't understand, like, you've done this whole album of crazy shit, and then the track at the end is going to be just a traditional Dylan song? Really? You expect us to sit through this after we've listened to all this garbage? You're going to give us a traditional old Bob Dylan song?
So we're done with this album.
We're done with it, yeah. I mean, unless you can interject something that's...
It's hard. I'll be honest, and I'm the fan. I'm the one, but it's hard. This one...
Which is also a terrible Who album. It's hard.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Well, you want the Who in the 80s.
It's a yikes. Problem too, yeah.
And then you go to the Stones in the 80s. But anyways, that goes back to the original thing we talked about in probably the first podcast about iconic bands and artists not being able to find their way.
Just eating shit in the 80s.
Yeah, pretty much. So,
all right.
Yeah. That and you always say, hey, what's a standout track? What's a track to go to if you want to listen to this album?
Skip this album.
I don't know.
The track to listen to is on Knocked Out Loaded. It's not on this one.
Look up Trust Yourself. Why not? That's an oddity.
Yeah, I wrote Passable. Sound like an 80s version of The Doors. That's what I wrote in my notes.
Wow.
Because it's very kind of dark. Like it's a lot of minor chords.
Yeah.
And the organ sounds, I think, were a little like The Doors. Something really triggered with me, like... Huh.
Dylan's. All right. There you go. Trust yourself to do the thing.